One of the most iconic photographs in American sports history comes from the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City. The photo is of Tommy Smith in first place on top of the medal stand, and in third place, John Carlos, his teammate. And they're both raising their fist, covered in black gloves, protesting racial injustice in the United States as the American national anthem plays. I've seen this photograph throughout my entire life, but I knew so little about what took place. I knew so little about Tommy Smith's life. And thankfully, because of the book Victory Stand, Raising My Fist for Justice, I know so much more about the life of Tommy Smith and that moment in 1968. This graphic novel is one you're going to want to add to your collection. It's phenomenal. It's important. It's beautiful. I had the opportunity to chat with Derek Barnes, one of the authors of this book, for the Yarn Podcast. I think you're really going to like this episode. I think you're going to learn a lot. I think you're going to be as fascinated as I was. I think you're going to want to run to your independent bookstore and pick up a copy. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Derek Barnes. Tell me about Victory Stand, Raising My Fist for Justice.
Victory Stand, Raising My Fist for Justice is about the amazing life of 1968 Olympic gold medalist Tommy Smith. And probably the biggest moment in his life was winning that gold medal and standing on that victory stand and doing a silent protest, something that had never been done before, raising his fist to the heavens and protesting, racism in this country, poverty, police brutality, hunger. He did all of that by a simple silent gesture. And it's probably the most memorable other than Colin Kaepernick's knee that has ever happened in American sports.
What is your earliest memory? Like, when do you first remember hearing about this event?
The first time I ever remember even seeing that image was at my uncle's house, my Uncle John, may he rest in peace. he had a weight room and he had a pool table down his basement. And he also had that picture of the dogs playing poker up, but he also had a huge poster of Tommy Smith on that fateful day, raising his fist. And I just that image got burned in my brain. Every time I went over his house, I thought about that. And I thought about, the story behind that and what would make him do that. For the longest, I thought that he was a member of the Black Panther Party. But obviously, I found out that that was not true. But I guess I was probably about 8 or 9, man, when I first saw that image. And it just stuck with me forever. I don't know an athlete, especially a Black athlete. Or it doesn't even have to be an athlete. I know, Black professionals who have that image up on their wallpaper, or have it up on their wall, they have it on their desk. It just means so much. And when we talk about defiance, when we talk about, resistance, and that image is the epitome of resistance.
What does it mean to you today?
Oh man, it means so much. When I sat down and had my first meeting with him, I was really overwhelmed, and I sat down in his man cave and seeing all these images of, he has a picture with every amazing American athlete that you could possibly think of, and all these trophies and fan art. And but when I got and I sat down and talked to him, man, he reminded me of maybe my dad, or he could be my grandfather, and I thought to myself, he'd probably be tired of telling this story. He's probably told it a million times, but he was so enthusiastic about telling it to me. So I put my notepad down, and as he was telling me about how, where he came from Texas, a large family of 12, 13 kids on a sharecropping family. I was like, this dude is really just a regular country boy, man. And so I thought about what kind of influence or impact this book would have. It doesn't matter where you come from in this country. You don't have to be from a civil rights family. You don't have to come from wealth. You don't even have to have a huge voice. But you must use what you have in order to make this a better country and make this a better place. He used his ability of speed to win that race. I mean, just think about it. He had to win that race to be in that number one stand. And so I think this book is going to serve as, you know, inspiration for those young people across the country who may be going through book bans in their state and other issues, you know, dealing with, you know, gender issues, that you have a voice. You use whatever you've been blessed with to stand up and raise your fist in a, you know, a sense.
That's so fascinating. What was the process like? So you sat down with Tommy and you had this initial meeting. I'm just curious what it looked like when Dawood came into the picture. Just tell me about, I think this is your first time writing a graphic novel.
Yeah.
So tell me all about that. I'm just dying to know how these three amazing men came together to create this brilliant book.
Well, when I first went to his house, I stayed all day. His wife, the Lois, lovely woman. They treated me like a son that day. You know, she made dinner and everything. And at the end, when I had all my notes, we came up to the dinner table and I was like, yo, I think we're going to make a novel in verse. And she looked at me and nodded her head. She's like, no, I think you can do better than that. I think you can do better than that. And so I was like, all right, cool. So I went back to Simon Baldwin. He's a publisher at Norton Young Readers. And he came up with the idea actually of doing a graphic novel. Obviously I had never done one before and I was, you know, kind of intimidated, but man, it took me like 2 or 3 months. I gathered every graphic novel, every award-winning graphic novel that I could. And I just studied style, structure, technique, voice, and then put my own stank on it, you know, put my own voice. And we didn't have an illustrator, you know, for the longest. We actually signed this agreement in 2018. And then COVID happened. And so that slowed everything down. But right before COVID happened, I compiled a list of African-American illustrators and comic book legends, man. It was like maybe 10 on that list. And, you know, Simon ended up choosing, you know, Dawood, who I was really pleased, man. I've been a fan of his Brother Man comics, you know, for the longest. He's done a couple of books for Kwame. And I just thought it was just a perfect fit, man. And he and I talk on a regular basis, man. Really cool brother, man. I like him a lot.
That's awesome. I'm really fascinated with how you told to tell the story in terms of time. Like you start at the race and then you go to his childhood and then you kind of like weave those two, you kind of weave back and forth. Can you talk about how you decided to do that and the kind of the reasoning behind that? Cause I thought it was so powerful.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. That's, you know, I was just trying to think of a technique to use. I didn't want to tell a linear, you know, cradle the current type of story. So I was like, what is the linchpin of this brother's story? What's the linchpin of his life? And it was actually that 19 seconds that he ran that race. So I was like, if I could stretch this 19 seconds out, you know, one of the most important facts about winning that race was he actually injured his thigh in the race prior to the finals. And they didn't know if he was actually going to race, but he was able to, because he looks at racing the same way you look at a, you know, automobile, or the way we look at jets from a very physical, medical, biological standpoint. He actually can, you know, you think about how much energy and what percentage to give certain muscles and which ones to pull back. I mean, he's just a very thoughtful and heady person when it comes to, you know, the science of, you know, track and field. And he was able to, you know, recover and run that race. And so I was like, I got to be able to, I don't want to tell the whole story and just get to that race. I got to figure out how to stress this 19 seconds out and how at every turn and every stretch of that race, I kind of weave in different parts of his life. You know, so we talk about, you know, that sharecropper family when they were part of that great migration, and a lot of Black people took from the South to the North, and Black people migrated also from the South to the West. And they were part of that. And so I just kind of stretched it out all the way until we got to that Olympic moment in 1968. So I hope it worked.
Oh, it worked. It worked brilliantly. What does it feel like to take this image that you saw? And so many people have seen the image and they probably know so little about Tommy Smith. Probably they only know that he won the gold medal and then what happened after that. So what does it feel like for you to be able to share this story, especially with a young audience? I think that's so important.
And you know, I mean, you've been now with me for a long time, man. And I didn't realize up until Crown. I mean, I've always thought about, you know, my body of work and what am I actually trying to say when all this is over with. I want people to be able to look back at my body of work and say that, you know, you can't look at any of my books and feel like that doesn't fit in with the rest of these pieces. So after Crown happened, man, I became very, you know, vigilant and very pinpoint focused on which projects I would take on. And my agent actually came to me, man. It was the ALA conference when I received, you know, all the awards for Crown. And we were like maybe 50 yards away from the Norton booth. And my agent's like, that's the WW Norton booth. And they want you to do a book with, you know, Tommy Smith. I was like, cool. And it was just like that. And I went up and we made a verbal agreement. And I just felt like that book fit into my wheelhouse. It fit into the work that I'm trying to do, which is really allow Black children to pick up one of my books and feel like they can take on the world. They feel empowered, but also every other child, you know, it really doesn't matter. I want you to be able to see yourself in every single character and every single narrative. And in this book, again, the most important thing that we need right now. I mean, we need more good people, but we also need more people to stand up and fight against injustice. And there's nothing more fitting than this image and, you know, Dr. Tommy Smith, who's great gentleman, man. It's been such a pleasure, you know, to meet him and know him.
And it was so interesting to me to just kind of hear all of the other sports figures like that have been like weaved in during his story and what he has led to, and especially in the year with the passing of the great Bill Russell and just so many stories of Bill Russell that so few people know. And Tommy, like we all know, not all, but many people know the basics, but I just am so thankful that you're able to really bring him to life and just to show, I mean, how much was taken from him, right? Like it wasn't just a medal. It was like his life.
Yeah. There was a documentary that came out a couple of years ago, and it went more in depth about that period of his life after the race and how he battled with depression, alcoholism. It was really rough for him. You know, that was actually the last race that he ever took. It was the last race. He never raced again as a Olympic athlete. He spent, I think, close to 20 years as the track coach, you know, in California. And I don't know when things actually started to turn around and shift for him. Maybe in the 80s when he started to do lectures, he and Brother Carlos, they started to travel around. And I think things started to shift, you know, like in the 80s. But it was really rough and it was really dark, you know, for him. But he's still here, man. And I'm just so grateful for that. So grateful.
Well, we are grateful that you're able to work with him and Dawood to create this brilliant book. Final question. What is your hope, Derek Barnes, for Victory Stand?
My hope for a Victory Stand is that every child who is curious about what their role is in this life, in this world. Again, I think everybody is born with a gift. A lot of us are born with multiple gifts. I feel like our main obligation is to figure out how we can use that in order to help other people. And so if you are a great speaker, are you a great listener? If you are a great athlete, you use that ability in order to uplift other people, just like Tommy Smith did, and especially that image. So I want every single child that picks up this book to get active and get moving and become somebody, become a difference maker wherever you are in your community, in your school, in your neighborhood. Get busy, raise your fist, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Yarn. Thank you to Derek Barnes for taking the time to chat with us for The Yarn. Derek, we appreciate you and all that you do for kids. You bring light to a world that at times can be very dark. Thank you to my co-host, Travis Yonker, for helping me produce and edit this episode. I've never talked to Travis about track, but I feel like he would have been a great 200-meter dash runner. I feel like he would have just came around that corner and flew into the straightaway. Maybe he did. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he would have dominated those Northern Michigan ovals and been a track star himself. Thank you to Philip Stead for creating our theme song. Thank you to the Free Music Archive for providing additional music for this episode. My name's Colby Sharp. Thank you for listening.